He was a global celebrity, a self-proclaimed spiritual guide, and one of Britain's most controversial voices. But in 2025, Russell Brand stood before a London courtroom and pleaded not guilty to 5 criminal charges, including rape and sexual assault. The accusations span decades. The witnesses say they were silenced. And the institutions that once celebrated him? They all went quiet. Until now. I'm an investigative journalist. And in this series, I'm asking one question. How does a man known for manipulation, charisma, and chaos avoid accountability for over 20 years? Through testimony, public record, and buried evidence, we follow the story from backstage to the courtroom, cutting through noise, media spin, and fandom loyalty. This is not speculation. This is not sensationalism. This is Shadows of Justice. And it begins now. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The Charisma Complex. I'm a journalist. My job isn't to judge, it's to investigate. And sometimes that means looking past headlines, celebrity personas, and emotional noise to ask uncomfortable questions. Questions like this. How do we reconcile charisma with criminal allegations? This is the question I brought with me to Southwark Crown Court on the morning of May 30, 2025, as Russell Brand stepped out of a black vehicle and walked past cameras into his preliminary hearing. He was dressed in all black, draped in layered crucifix necklaces, and held a small prayer book in his hand. It was a carefully constructed image, perhaps spiritual, perhaps performative, depending on interpretation. But either way, it made headlines. Brand pleaded not guilty to 5 criminal charges involving 4 separate women. 2 counts of rape, 2 counts of sexual assault, 1 count of indecent assault. The charges relate to incidents alleged to have taken place between 1999 and 2005, a period during which Brand was rising through the ranks of British entertainment, working with MTV, the BBC, and Channel 4. What is already confirmed through court records and law enforcement. Brand was formally charged after a lengthy investigation by the Metropolitan Police. The investigation followed a 2023 collaborative exposé by Channel 4's Dispatches, The Times, and The Sunday Times, which publicly aired allegations by 4 women. The alleged victims, whose identities have been protected, claim that Brand used his fame and influence to engage in coercive and non-consensual sexual acts. These women have been interviewed both on and off the record. All were adults at the time of the alleged incidents. Brand has publicly denied all allegations, stating in previous videos and posts that the relationships were consensual and that he is the subject of a politically or ideologically motivated attack. So why revisit events from over 20 years ago? Why now? To answer that, we need to examine Brand's public image, not from a tabloid perspective, but from a psychological and sociological lens. Because regardless of guilt or innocence, the power of persona plays a central role in this story. In the early 2000s, Brand was known for being provocative, outspoken, and sexually forward. This wasn't a secret, it was his brand. His autobiography openly describes encounters with dozens, sometimes hundreds, of women. In interviews, he spoke of sexual addiction, spiritual confusion, and emotional volatility. This leads us to a hypothesis worth investigating. Could public familiarity with Brand's transgressive persona have caused both the public and media institutions to normalize, or overlook, potentially abusive behavior? It's a legitimate question, especially in the context of what we now understand about social manipulation, group dynamics, and the power of celebrity narrative framing. Here are additional facts worth noting. In 2007, during the height of his fame, Brand was fired from BBC Radio 2 following an unrelated incident known as the Saxgate scandal. Though not tied to sexual misconduct, this event showed that when Brand's actions became a liability, institutions distanced themselves quickly. Until the 2023 investigation, however, there is no record of formal allegations pursued through legal channels. Despite long-standing rumors about his behavior, no national UK media outlet undertook an in-depth investigation into Brand's conduct prior to the Joint Dispatches report in 2023. This absence of investigation, despite Brand's admitted behavioral history and growing complaints behind the scenes, raises questions about editorial decision-making, industry complicity, and the role of commercial interests in suppressing difficult narratives. It's important to be clear. Allegations are not convictions. Brand has pleaded not guilty. The case has not gone to trial, and no verdict has been rendered. However, as an investigative journalist, it is my role to examine the timeline of events, the institutional response, or lack thereof, the mechanisms of public influence, and the psychological dynamics at play when allegations collide with personality cults. This is not about scandal. It's about systems, how people, platforms, and power interact in ways that either expose the truth or bury it. In the episodes ahead, we'll explore Chapter 2, How Media Institutions Responded or Failed to Respond to Early Signs. Chapter 3, The First-Hand Accounts from Survivors Who Chose to Come Forward. Chapter 4, The PR War and How Brand's Image Evolved from Provocateur to Spiritualist. Chapter 5, The Courtroom Dynamics and Legal Strategy Now Unfolding. Chapter 6, The Bigger Picture, What This Case Tells Us About Justice, Ethics, and the Power of Manipulation in a Modern Media Society. This isn't about proving guilt or innocence. It's about asking the right questions before the courtroom answers them for us. Buried bylines. When the story about Russell Brand broke in September 2023 through the Sunday Times, The Times, and Channel 4's dispatches, many in the public treated it as a bombshell. But inside parts of the UK media industry, the response wasn't shock. It was a quieter, more uncomfortable acknowledgement. "This isn't new," one Channel 4 staffer told me. "It's just the first time someone put it on the record." In this chapter, I'm not concerned with what Russell Brand allegedly did or didn't do. That is the job of the court. I'm focused on a different question. Why weren't these allegations investigated and made public sooner? What we know: the earliest known claims about Brand's behavior, now central to the legal charges, date back over 20 years, between 1999 and 2005. This was during the rise of his career in British television and radio. During that time, Brand worked for MTV UK, BBC Radio 6 Music, BBC Radio 2, Channel 4. Public records confirm that during this same period, Brand was also in active addiction, as he later publicly stated, openly promiscuous, self-described in interviews, and his 2007 autobiography, branded as dangerous, raw, and chaotic by both fans and media outlets. By 2007, Brand had achieved celebrity status in the UK. He was hosting awards shows, publishing memoirs, and transitioning into Hollywood films. The absence of reporting. Despite Brand's growing fame and his own disclosures about sexual excess and boundary-pushing behavior, there were no major investigations by British media into allegations of sexual misconduct until 2023. This gap matters. And here's why. In journalism, especially at national papers and broadcasters, reporters are regularly given tips, rumors, or soft leads about public figures. Whether or not they follow those leads depends on several factors: credibility of the sources, legal risk, access to the subject, commercial value of maintaining a relationship with the celebrity or their network. According to former Channel 4 producers, there were internal concerns about Brand's conduct going back to the early 2000s. I spoke to two individuals who worked in production at that time. One of them told me, "There were definitely complaints. Not about rape, at least not that I was told, but about him being sexually inappropriate with guests or staff." However, no paper trail of formal investigations, HR reports, or public disciplinary action exists. Patterns in media behavior. This is not unique to Russell Brand. We've seen similar patterns in high-profile cases involving figures like Jimmy Savile, R. Kelly, Harvey Weinstein, and Bill Cosby. In each case, the story follows a now familiar pattern. Rumors or informal complaints circulate within the industry. Media outlets hesitate to publish due to legal exposure. The subject continues gaining fame or influence. Only once multiple victims go on the record, often many years later, does the media act. One former UK newspaper editor I spoke with, off the record, described it this way: "Russell was controversial, but he was also ratings. The industry didn't want to go first. This raises a working hypothesis, not fact, but a reasonable theory based on media history, that Russell Brand may have been shielded, not through a coordinated conspiracy, but through a collective reluctance to be the first to challenge a profitable, high-profile figure. This is what I refer to as passive complicity, not overt protection, just selective inertia." The 2023 turning point. So why did the story finally come out in 2023? According to reporters at The Times, the investigation was triggered after several women approached the outlet independently, not in coordination. The media outlets agreed to share resources to vet the allegations, gather corroboration, and secure legal protections. Channel 4's Dispatches aired its documentary simultaneously with the print expose, maximizing the public impact. This type of collaborative journalism is rare, and usually reserved for cases where sources are vulnerable, evidence is fragmented, and legal threats are expected. In short, the story wasn't missed. It was delayed by fear, by caution, and possibly by profit motives. Editorial ethics and responsibility. Let me be precise. There is no evidence that any specific individual or organization knowingly covered up crimes. However, the absence of early reporting, despite well-known rumors, reflects a broader media ecosystem where powerful personalities are often treated as untouchable. Profit motives can outweigh investigative impulse. Victim accounts are often deprioritized unless fully documented and corroborated. That is the core issue this chapter highlights. Not what Russell Brand did, but what institutions around him didn't do. Conclusion. As a journalist, I do not speculate on guilt. I report what is verifiable. What is verifiable is this. Concerns about Russell Brand's behavior existed long before 2023. British media institutions were aware of his reputation, but chose not to investigate publicly for over a decade. When multiple women finally came forward, they did so not because the system invited them, but because the system had long ignored them. The result? A delayed reckoning. In Chapter 3, we'll focus on those women, their backgrounds, their accounts, and how each made the decision to speak out. This is no longer just a story about one man. It's about media accountability, social psychology, and the consequences of inaction. The witnesses step forward. In any criminal case involving allegations of rape or sexual assault, the voices of those who step forward carry the heaviest weight, and often, the greatest risk. This chapter is not about proving guilt. It's about listening, about documenting what has already been said on record, publicly, carefully, and with legal backing. Because the Russell Brand investigation, unlike many celebrity allegations that float anonymously online, was the product of months of coordinated cross-platform investigative journalism. And when the women who came forward in 2023 chose to attach their accounts to their real lives, even while using aliases, they did so under extreme scrutiny. Let's begin by establishing what has been made public. The women at the center of the case. The Times, Sunday Times, and Dispatches worked with 4 primary women. Each alleged sexual misconduct, assault, or psychological manipulation by Brand between 1999 and 2013. Of these 4, one was 16 years old at the time of her alleged relationship with Brand. 2 others reported non-consensual sexual acts, including forced penetration. 1 said she was emotionally coerced and degraded during a relationship she initially believed was consensual. It's important to note that these women provided contemporaneous evidence, including text messages, medical records, and journal entries. Spoke to family members, therapists, and friends at the time of the incidents, many of whom corroborated key details. Agreed to go on record with Dispatches after extensive vetting and fact-checking by journalists and legal teams. While their identities remain protected for privacy, their testimony has been released publicly. Key themes in their testimonies. I listened to every minute of the Dispatches broadcast. I read every word of the Times report. Several themes emerged across their accounts, consistent enough to raise serious questions about behavioral patterns. Power imbalance. Several women described a dynamic where Brand used his fame and age to create a psychological imbalance. He was older, more famous, and presented himself as spiritually enlightened. One woman, pseudonym Alice, said, "He told me that my trauma made me special, that sex with him would help heal me." This kind of language, spiritual, flattering, then coercive, is a well-documented pattern in manipulation cases involving celebrities and charismatic leaders. Isolation. One survivor described being driven to Brand's home and having her phone taken from her. Another described being told not to speak to friends or family about the nature of their relationship. In both cases, the women said they initially believed the behavior was normal because Brand framed it as intimacy or spiritual purification. Fear of retaliation. Several women said they feared no one would believe them, given Brand's public image and media connections. One reported that when she confronted him after the alleged assault, he laughed and dismissed it as a miscommunication. Public reaction and backlash. When the investigation aired in 2023, reactions were polarized. Supporters of Brand claimed the women were part of a smear campaign. Critics of celebrity culture pointed to this case as evidence of systemic neglect. Many survivors of unrelated assaults shared their own stories, saying the women's hesitation to come forward reflected a reality they understood too well. But one of the women in the dispatch's interview said something that stuck with me. Coming forward wasn't about destroying Russell. It was about reclaiming what I lost, my ability to trust myself. That statement, while emotional, also reflects a core component of trauma-informed investigative psychology: the need to validate lived experience as part of the public record, regardless of eventual trial outcomes. What is corroborated? To stay grounded in evidence, I focused on what's verifiably supported. Text messages from Brand to one woman show him apologizing after an alleged assault. A rape crisis center confirmed that one woman sought services within hours of her encounter. Friends and family members provided signed statements, saying they were informed of the alleged behavior when it occurred, not retroactively. Medical records, examined by reporters and legal consultants, aligned with at least two of the allegations. These elements matter. They move the story beyond hearsay. They give weight to testimony that, by design, faces intense public and legal scrutiny. Hypotheses based on pattern recognition. While I cannot say Brand is guilty, that remains the court's role. This case reflects several patterns observed in other high-profile abuse investigations. The alleged behavior escalated over time. Victims were often isolated or emotionally vulnerable. The accused maintained a charismatic, self-effacing public persona that helped deflect suspicion. Institutional inaction played a role in prolonging silence. This leads to a tentative hypothesis that the intersection of fame, spiritual rhetoric, and public contrarianism may have created a protective social force field around Brand, making it especially difficult for victims to be believed. It's not a verdict, but it is a critical insight. Moving forward, as of this recording, Russell Brand has denied all allegations and pleaded not guilty in court. No trial has yet taken place. No verdict has been issued. But in investigative journalism, the trial isn't the only metric of truth. The fact that these women came forward, knowing the consequences, knowing the scrutiny, is itself a historical event. Because for years, this story sat in the shadows. Now it's being examined, line by line, document by document, word by word. And that brings us to chapter 4, where we'll shift focus. We'll examine how Russell Brand's public image transformed after the period covered by these allegations. From chaos to calm, from addiction to awakening, from entertainer to guru. The question is, was that evolution real, or was it simply rebranding? The rebrand. Russell Brand built his career on disruption. In the early 2000s, his name became synonymous with chaos, erratic comedy, raw sexuality, and public confession. He was fired from MTV, banned from award shows, and described himself as a sex addict with a persecution complex. That image defined the first chapter of his fame. But by the mid-2010s, a very different version of Russell Brand emerged. The eyeliner faded, the hair stayed wild, but the message changed. He published books on spirituality. He launched YouTube channels discussing mindfulness, political corruption, and Eastern philosophy. He referenced Ram Dass and Krishnamurti, not groupies or narcotics. The public was introduced to a new identity, one grounded in recovery, enlightenment, and seemingly redemption. This chapter examines that transformation, what prompted it, how it was received, and what role it plays in the narrative unfolding now. The timeline of the rebrand. The transition wasn't abrupt. It unfolded gradually over nearly a decade. 2013, Brand publishes Recovery, Freedom from Our Addictions, a book based on the 12-step program, framing addiction as a spiritual disorder. 2014 to 2016, he becomes increasingly vocal about political inequality, economic injustice, and global media control, appearing on programs like Newsnight and launching The Trues, his online commentary series. 2019 to 2022. He pivots more fully toward wellness, launching guided meditations, podcast interviews with alternative health figures, and long-form discussions on conspiracy, censorship, and personal awakening. During this period, Brand's audience expanded from comedy fans to followers of spiritual discourse, political dissenters, and increasingly, those skeptical of mainstream media narratives. The power of language and influence. As part of my investigation, I analyzed Brand's public content over the last 5 years, across YouTube, podcast transcripts, and published books. Several patterns emerge. Spiritual framing of personal history. Brand often acknowledges his past, but reframes it as essential to his spiritual journey. The narrative becomes, "I was broken, therefore I am credible," positioning as a truth seeker. He consistently identifies himself as a voice for the disenfranchised, framing mainstream narratives as dishonest and his own platform as liberated from censorship or control. Language anchored in healing, his interviews are peppered with phrases like higher consciousness, trauma release, and inner freedom, terms used to establish authority within the wellness and recovery space. There is nothing inherently manipulative about this. Many public figures experience personal growth and transformation. But in this case, the timing of that transformation overlaps with periods in which Brand now faces serious legal allegations. This invites a careful question, one that cannot be answered, only examined. Did the shift from provocateur to philosopher insulate Brand from scrutiny, or was it a genuine path to personal accountability? The role of audience psychology. One expert I spoke with, a professor of behavioral psychology at a London university, offered this insight. When a person undergoes a highly visible moral transformation, the audience often assumes redemption has already taken place. That makes it psychologically harder to believe new allegations of past harm. This is known as confirmation bias. Once the public accepts a revised identity, it becomes emotionally difficult to accept data that contradicts that identity. In simpler terms, we want our heroes to stay redeemed. We want their stories to resolve cleanly. Brand's rebrand offered resolution. A man once described as dangerous now spoke of love, compassion, and self-inquiry. To many, he was no longer a risk, he was a guru. Skepticism and spiritual narratives. The wellness industry, worth over $4.5 trillion globally, is often built around personalities who promise transformation. Within that space, charisma is currency. Testimonials become evidence. And moral authority is often assumed rather than earned. Brand's success in this ecosystem was immediate. His videos on awakening and addiction regularly receive hundreds of thousands of views. His podcast guests range from neuroscientists to conspiracy theorists. He is described by fans as a truth-teller, seer, even a prophet of consciousness. But in the context of this investigation, a tension emerges between two facts. Brand is presumed innocent until proven guilty. Yet he controls his public narrative in a way few public figures can, by blending entertainment, philosophy, and spiritual redemption into one cohesive persona. That blend makes it difficult for new, contradictory evidence, including serious allegations, to gain traction among his base. What we can and cannot conclude, what is verifiable? Russell Brand's public behavior changed significantly between 2013 and 2020. His new image centers on compassion, recovery, and resistance to institutional control. He continues to publicly deny all allegations against him. What is not verifiable but open to legitimate inquiry, whether the transformation was entirely authentic or partially strategic, whether his spiritual framing serves as protection against accountability, whether audiences have been socially manipulated, intentionally or not, into conflating charisma with truth. Final thought, Brand's rebrand complicates the public response to his legal troubles. It doesn't nullify the allegations, but it does influence how they're received. In Chapter 5, we'll leave the media arena and enter the courtroom, where transformation, charisma, and ideology carry less weight than timelines, testimony, and evidence. We'll break down the charges, analyze the defense, and explore how courts handle cases where public identity is deeply at odds with private allegations. This is the collision point, where narrative meets legal fact. The legal theater. Courtrooms are not built for public consensus. They are designed for procedure, precedent, and provable fact. But when a high-profile figure like Russell Brand stands trial, the law becomes more than law. It becomes a stage where reputation, justice, and perception all compete for dominance. This chapter explores what we know about the legal case against Brand, how both sides have begun to present their arguments, and what precedents may influence the outcome. Let's begin with the structure of the charges. The charges. As of May 30, 2025, Brand has pleaded not guilty to the following five charges brought against him by the Crown Prosecution Service. 2 counts of rape. 2 counts of sexual assault. 1 count of indecent assault. The alleged crimes involve 4 separate women, with incidents dating between 1999 and 2005, before Brand's public pivot toward spirituality and activism. The trial is scheduled to begin on June 3, 2026, at Southwark Crown Court, London. The estimated duration ranges from 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the complexity of witness testimony and procedural motions. These charges are not symbolic. They are criminal accusations under UK law. If convicted, Brand faces multiple years in prison. Legal strategy, the prosecution. Based on information from the CPS and prior reports from the Times and Dispatches, the prosecution appears to be focusing on several core themes. Pattern of behavior, presenting multiple women with similar allegations, showing what prosecutors will argue is a consistent method of control, isolation, and coercion. Power and influence, emphasizing Brand's status at the time of the alleged incidents, suggesting that victims may have felt unable to speak out due to the imbalance of power. Contemporaneous evidence, introducing records such as text messages showing apologies or admissions, therapy records and medical notes from the time of the incidents, testimony from family or friends whom the women confided in immediately afterward. While each allegation must be examined on its own legal merits, the Crown will likely argue that the consistency of the accusations, despite being years apart, strengthens the case. Legal strategy, the defense. Brand's legal team is expected to pursue several lines of defense. Publicly, Brand has consistently stated that all of his past sexual relationships were consensual, that the charges are part of a broader cultural or political attack on public figures who question establishment narratives, that he is the victim of a trial by media. In court, his attorneys will likely emphasize lack of forensic evidence, given the age of the allegations. No prior convictions or formal charges across his decades-long career. Inconsistencies in accuser timelines, if present. The potential impact of media coverage biasing public perception before trial. Additionally, the defense may attempt to introduce evidence of Brand's sobriety, recovery journey, and philanthropic work, although judges often restrict unrelated character evidence. The jury challenge. In cases involving celebrity defendants, jury selection becomes a critical factor. The court must impanel jurors who are not biased by prior knowledge or opinions of Brand, are willing to evaluate only the evidence presented in court, can separate media narratives from legal testimony. This is easier said than done. Brand is not a minor public figure. He is internationally known, with a vast digital footprint. Judges may allow both legal teams to question jurors more deeply, or even sequester the panel in the event of significant media coverage. Legal precedents and cultural context. Several recent UK and global cases provide context for what lies ahead. Harvey Weinstein, USA, convicted based largely on patterns of behavior and witness corroboration rather than direct forensic evidence. Kevin Spacey, UK, acquitted in 2023 after the court found insufficient consistency among accuser testimonies. Rolf Harris, UK, convicted in 2014 on historical sexual abuse charges, despite the age of the allegations. These cases suggest that historical abuse cases can succeed in court when evidence is sufficient and corroboration is strong. Celebrity status does not guarantee conviction or acquittal, but it complicates both. What we know so far, verified, Brand has entered a not guilty plea. Four women are central to the prosecution's case. Trial is scheduled to begin June 3, 2026. Evidence includes digital records, testimonies, and past medical documentation. Under legal review, authenticity and admissibility of survivor evidence. Whether Brand's past public statements may be introduced in court. Impact of Brand's public platform and ongoing media presence on potential jury neutrality. Observations from the courthouse. I attended Brand's preliminary hearing. He arrived flanked by security, but without speaking to press. Inside the courtroom, his posture was attentive but detached, seemingly rehearsed. He made no public statements but maintained eye contact with the judge throughout. His team submitted a request to allow continued access to his podcasting equipment and staff during the trial period, a sign that Brand intends to continue shaping his public image even as the case proceeds. This dynamic, legal trial versus media narrative, will be central in how this case is perceived. But in court, perception matters less than evidence. Closing thoughts. The phrase legal theater may sound dismissive, but it reflects a truth that public trials often become spectacles where truth, emotion, and law blur under pressure. Brand's trial will test not just the strength of witness testimony, but the integrity of a legal system asked to weigh decades-old allegations against a figure many already think they know. In Chapter 6, we will step back from the case specifics and ask a broader question. What does this story reveal about justice in an era of manipulation, media saturation, and social division. Because beyond guilt or innocence lies something deeper. The challenge of truth itself. Shadows of justice. In a courtroom, justice is supposed to be blind. But outside the courtroom, justice is often filtered through headlines, hashtags, algorithms, and emotional fatigue. This story, The Charges Against Russell Brand, is not just about one man. It is about how a society responds to power, accusation, and evidence in a time when truth has never been more fragile. We've now traced this case from public image to private testimony, from institutional silence to a pending trial. Let's take a step back and ask, what have we learned? The facts revisited. Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to 5 charges stemming from alleged incidents between 1999 and 2005. For women are central to the case. They provided detailed on-record testimony, supported by contemporaneous evidence, to the Times and Channel 4's dispatches. Brand denies all wrongdoing. The trial is scheduled to begin in June 2026. These are the facts. They are not up for interpretation. But around these facts sits an ecosystem, social media, political commentary, online discourse, that shapes how those facts are received. And that's where the shadows of justice emerge. When narratives compete with evidence, what this case reveals is not just a legal battle, it's a battle for perception. On one side, survivors of alleged abuse have spent decades navigating trauma, stigma, and silence. When they finally spoke, it was in carefully structured formats, backed by seasoned reporters, and legally reviewed before broadcast. On the other side, Brand has maintained control of a vast media platform with millions of followers, producing real-time responses, long-form videos, and public narratives. He's framed the allegations as part of a coordinated media attack, a symptom of establishment fear, or, at worst, a politically motivated takedown for speaking out on controversial issues. It's important to note that none of the survivors made any public political statements. Their testimonies were private, specific, and focused on personal experience, not ideology. This conflict between structured testimony and unrestricted public broadcasting demonstrates a new legal challenge. What happens when the accused controls the narrative before the evidence is presented? Institutional accountability. Beyond Brand, this case asks uncomfortable questions about institutions that enabled silence. Why did media executives overlook repeated behavioral warnings? Why did no formal investigations occur until 2023, despite rumors and informal complaints? How did charisma, commercial value, and cultural influence combine to delay accountability? These aren't conspiracies, they're social patterns. They reflect how market psychology, risk aversion, and celebrity privilege can prevent institutions from doing what they claim to do: inform, protect, and act. The real question is not who protected Brand, but what systems allowed protection to happen by default. Public opinion versus legal burden. As the trial nears, the divide between public opinion and legal burden will only grow. Some will say the allegations are too old. Some will say the women are opportunistic. Some will say Brand's transformation proves rehabilitation, even without conviction. And yet others will point to patterns, repeated behaviors, industry inaction, a familiar cycle we've seen in cases from Cosby to Seville to Weinstein. The danger lies in choosing which version of justice to believe, rather than waiting for the process to run its course. That's why, as journalists, our duty isn't to lead the verdict. It's to preserve the integrity of the record, so future readers, listeners, and decision makers can access facts unswayed by noise. The deeper meaning of justice. What is justice in a case like this? If Brand is convicted, some will call it too late. If Brand is acquitted, others will call it a failure of the system. And if the case is settled out of court, quietly, strategically, it may leave more questions than answers. The point is not the outcome. The point is what the process reveals. It reveals how difficult it is for survivors to come forward, how media institutions have often failed to protect the vulnerable, how celebrity can shape reality, and how manipulation, whether personal, institutional, or cultural, can obscure accountability. Final reflection. I titled this series Shadows of Justice because that's where this story lives. Not in the spotlight of certainty, but in the shaded corners between legal truth and lived experience. We have explored a timeline spanning decades, a public persona that evolved faster than institutions could respond, a media ecosystem that once celebrated provocation, now reckoning with complicity, and 4 women who decided that silence was no longer bearable. Russell Brand will stand trial. Until then, he remains legally presumed innocent. But whatever the verdict, the broader culture must now decide. What kind of behavior do we overlook in the name of charisma? And what will we do differently next time? The shadows of justice are not just the absence of law. They are the quiet spaces where consequences fail to reach. It's time we lit those spaces with truth.